tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 466 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Good evening.
Welcome back, Seda. Did you have a chance to catch up on the shows after the week?
I did. Yep. The only thing is I could not find the dub of Rooster Fighter, so I watched the sub of Rooster Fighter.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe there'll be differences when we talk about it.
My assumption is that both, I didn't watch the last airing of Rooster Fighter at the end of the block. I assume it was also dubbed too, right? They would have said something different, I assume.
You know, I didn't stay up to watch it, so I don't know. That's what I assume, though, as well. They didn't mention it being otherwise.
I think the dub is on Adult Swim, but I just found it elsewhere.
Gotcha. All right. Let's talk about the blocks lined up a little bit here. We have gotten some news in the past couple days. This isn't big news. This is regarding the rerun slots. I had put in my notes here the two upcoming changes, but I wanted to talk about these because I think several days ago there was an initial post made by Toonami. It was in that same graphic style as the one you posted from Facebook that said that when ZOM 100 ends on March 28th, or I guess the week before or whatever, on March 28th, originally it was going to be Lazarus that replaced ZOM 100 in the rerun slot. But now they've posted a revised update that says it's actually going to be Ninja Kamui that replaces ZOM 100.
Yep, that's what I see.
Yeah. And then the other thing I learned today is that, as well, Daima is about to end in the rerun slots as well, and that is going to be replaced by Blue Exorcist, and most specifically, Season 1 Blue Exorcist.
I guess if they have, if they still have the license, and
yeah, might as well use it.
Might as well.
So. Yeah, it's interesting that they have the license, I guess, to all the way back to Season 1.
I mean, Season 1 was on the block last year, right? So they wouldn't have, the license shouldn't have expired already. That would have been.
But really I wonder if the license is like about to expire. I don't know how long these things last, and they just figure, well, might as well air the Season 1 before it expires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of like, I don't know how these things work, but like when they get the license to air Blue Exorcist, do they get all of it or do they only get like a season of it? Like, I don't understand how that works.
It probably comes in different packages depending on.
Yeah, I would say it's kind of very context dependent and IP dependent and you know, yeah, it just depends.
And we've speculated before the reason why maybe, I think there's a couple shows like there is a Blue Exorcist Season 5 that we didn't get yet. Is that out on like home video, like Blu-ray or DVD, or no? I know it aired.
I don't know.
Anyways, that might be a reason why they didn't get that yet, because maybe the rights are different. Who knows?
Yeah. Quick Google search says that as of March 2026, there is no official confirmation. Oh, wait, I'm reading the wrong thing. It would have been Season 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
If I look up Blue Exorcist Blu-ray, I see Blue Exorcist, the complete series, and it's back like 10 years ago.
Like, yeah.
Not so complete.
Yeah, I don't have any good information on that. But you're kind of speculating, like we often do, that they won't probably bring out airing it on Toonami until they have the Blu-ray releases.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, it looks like the Blu-ray release actually did come out last year.
Okay.
If I BlueExorcist.com, BlueKnight/BDDVD. So yeah, that's the newest season. Yeah, so it came out last December, so a couple months ago. But that would have been right when like Season 4 was airing, right? Or very close. So maybe mm-hmm. the timing wasn't great. But as of just a few months ago, 3 months ago, fifth season of Blue Exorcist is out on Blu-ray. So if that you know, complicates or had did complicate getting rights back, you know, middle of last year, maybe they can get it in the future because now it's out. So we're not waiting on anything to release. It's out. You can buy it right now if you want.
Yeah, I just add it to the long list of shows that we could potentially finish out on Toonami, and we haven't yet. There's like five of these shows now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just to clarify, that Blue Exorcist rerun is going to be, that'll be at the 2:30 time slot starting on April 4th. But I agree. The fact that they're starting it with season one kind of makes me feel like they're just like, they've got it and they're like, oh, we're going to fill a slot, so we'll use this.
I mean, it also helps that they can just lock down a rerun slot and not have to worry about it for any period of time if they don't want to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like we've seen before when they might put something in a rerun leading up to a new airing, but the fact that they're starting with season one makes me think that's not what this is. This is just time filler. Okay. And that's pretty much all I had for news.
I saw that I missed last week when I was gone that Danadan season two did happen, or it will happen.
Yes.
It's replacing Primal.
Good news.
We knew it was coming. Yep. That's good.
Something to look forward to, I think. I've heard really good things about that. And I'm glad I haven't watched it yet, so it'll be all new to me.
Yep. It's let's just say Danadan remains good.
That's if it's this more of the same, I'm all in. Okay. Well, with the news out of the way, I guess we're ready to go ahead and do the rundown. So let's begin with the premiere of a brand new show on the block, Rooster Fighter. Something's broken. Rooster Fighter, Episode 1, A Rooster Among Cranes. So, yeah, I'm going to start out by saying that this episode was rated TVMA SV, SV meaning sex and violence. And yeah, so just be prepared for that.
Those were definitely present.
Yeah. So it starts out, there's this like mom and a kid named Yuki that are walking down the street. They want to get some yakitori. And then suddenly this like female, three-headed female demon starts attacking them. And this is like demons like crawling out like, you're my child, you're my child. And tries to steal the little kid Yuki and tries to eat him. And but then we see a rooster step up and he saves this little kid. And this little rooster. Now, you watched the subtitled version, Seda. But for us, we heard the sultry tones of Patrick Seitz.
Yep. I don't know who the Japanese voice was, but, you know, deep voice, so seems
I mean, if there was Justice in this world, it would be, who's Dio's Japanese voice actor? It's like Kobayasu or something? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Like his voice,
A pretty famous Japanese voice actor. I mean, Patrick's is famous in the U.S., but...
You mean the voice of Dio?
Yes.
In Japanese, Koyasu? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. There you go. That's what name I was looking for. If there was Justice World, it would have been him, but I don't know. I know whose actual voice actor in Japanese is.
Takahito Koyasu, yeah. I don't know if that's the voice. Let me check. I'll check.
Yeah, I'm curious. Very stoic. And also, I had to be reminded. I don't know why I always forget this. He's Frankie. Now, most people probably think of him as Frankie. I always, for some reason, think of him as Gamagori from Kill la Kill.
I mean, Seitz is in a billion things. Yeah, I guess Seitz is Frankie, but that's definitely not the character my voice goes to.
I agree. Isn't that weird? But I mean, that's probably his most famous role. So it's interesting.
Well, I guess it depends how you define fame, but there's definitely more episodes of Frankie voice work recorded than most other characters. But I would definitely say in maybe like general anime zeitgeist and also maybe in terms of overall influence, Dio is definitely more important character than Frankie is. But again, there's like hundreds of Frankie episodes and only like 30 Dio episodes or whatever. That's probably even being generous.
The voice of the rooster KG is Kenta Miyake, who has done a ton of stuff. I'm looking through his list right now, but you know, nothing jumps to mind as I scroll through this, but he's been voicing for quite a while and has a lot of roles. So
that's got to be Japanese something voice. In here. Let me look here. I'm curious.
Oh, he's All Might in My Hero Academia.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
The Japanese voice of All Might. Yeah.
Or so. That would work with what we're going on here.
Yes.
One thing I wanted to mention real quick, it's kind of like an aside, but it just maybe something that stuck out to me. There was the bit where the kid was talking about what he wanted to eat for dinner, and he was mentioning all like chicken, I think gizzards and neck and entrails and stuff like that, which yeah. would be not necessarily like prime cuts. And like his mother was joking that he's talking like an old man, but actually kind of related me, it made me think of a personal story that my father was born in West Africa, and obviously when he was a child, like kids didn't tend to get the, or especially really young kids didn't tend to get the premium cuts of meat and or and whatnot. So my dad described sometimes how when he was really, really young, you get like the gizzards or stuff of that nature. So it kind of made me like that story of my father talking about his childhood kind of reminded me of this example of this young child like going out of his way to like maybe not go for the prime cuts, but that's actually an experience that a lot of, I would say, children in parts of the world have. I guess that would be unusual for a well-off Japanese family, but because even his mother was like, oh, that's kind of weird. But it just made me flashback a little bit to that of my father's personal history, rather than my own personal history, but it just made me think of that. And so
it's not the last bit of chicken food related content in this episode.
Of course not. But this particular moment just kind of made me think of that, like it's kind of personally, or again, for my father's past, but you know, so.
So after the kid Yuki is saved by Keiichi, our protagonist, we flash back to 1 year ago. So basically, we're seeing where Keiichi is now at the beginning of this episode, but now it looks like the series is going to be kind of set in the past. It's going to be set 1 year ago. And we see, the very first thing we see is he is basically getting it on with a chicken. So he's a rooster, so that makes sense. But nonetheless, that's happening. And then they kind of like go to sleep, and they wake up the next morning and he's leaving, and he's kind of like a one night stand type guy. He's like, I'm off, I'm a wanderer, you know, he's like a lone rooster.
Yeah, peace and quiet is not for me, or whatever.
Right. So he's just walking through the town, and he runs into a bunch of annoying kids. So first it's like these two schoolgirls who think he's really cute and try to feed him fried chicken, which he's like, of course, like, what are you doing? I do like this. I'm sure this is deliberate. I like this. I like that they make it very, very clear to the viewers that he just sounds like a chicken and looks like a chicken to everyone, or a rooster.
Yep. Right. No one can hear him. Like, it's us, the audience, that hears him as a human voice, but everyone else just hears him as a rooster clucking.
Yeah. And they often do like both at the same time. So you hear his voice, but you can also hear the clucking sound he's making under his voice. At the same time. So I like that. They're just reiterating all the time. It's like, yeah, he's just a rooster. And then two young boys decide to pick on him. They start like, you know, they're going to like rough him up and stuff just because they're just annoying brats.
One of them even says, like, let's feed him to our cat.
Just brats being brats.
That they like pick him up and they're about to, that's where they're going to go. And then he escapes after that.
Because
they were first going to eat him themselves, but then they were thinking, oh, he's probably diseased. So then they changed to, oh, let's feed it to one of our cats or something.
And like for the viewer, it's just like, it's completely normal. Like at this point in the episode, it's just a rooster. The kids are acting normal and like they're jerks or whatever. But nonetheless, the kids are acting like kids. They don't recognize he's not like intelligent to them or anything. And the way he acts, like we hear him talking and stuff in his head or whatever, speaking, but he just sounds like clucks and everything. But like he's having these conversations. They're not hearing him. Like that's the whole premise, is that like he's an intelligent rooster, but he doesn't appear to anyone as anything more than just a rooster. Yep. And he goes running into someone's yard to get away. And he runs into this old man who kind of sees the boys coming for him. And he kind of like stands up for Keiichi. And he's like, oh, Mr. Cluckers. He kind of names him on the spot. He's like, oh, Mr. Cluckers, you've come back. Finally, I'm glad to see you. He's my rooster. And he lives here. And it kind of protects
it's
him
a peak
in that
rooster
moment.
Name.
Yeah, Mr. Cluckers.
That is also what the subtitles said. I wonder what the Japanese... like word for cluckers is, right? Like, what would that be? Like, probably whatever sound they make. You know, there's some sound that a rooster makes. Whatever.
I'm not going to try to do broken English in Japanese. That's beyond my pay grade, but it's probably something like that.
So he suddenly, oh, and by the way, when he was running past there, we see there was like a salary man who just was had his face up against like a wall and he's just muttering to himself. And then the next thing we see is this like giant monster in the form of a car salesman. And he's like got glasses and like, I don't know, he's got like a tie on. It's like a monster it's like the guy turned, the salesman turned into a monster basically. And he starts attacking and destroying.
Yeah, it's very clearly him.
Exactly.
And he keep muttering to himself like he's got to reach a quota. So he's, you know, a salesman, obviously not having a great day at work or whatever, and manifests into this monstrous being somehow.
Yeah, I guess it's very clear. We're going to see, I guess, as the series moves along, if it's a function of, is magic doing this? Is like science doing this? Is it just something about the world where if you get too freaked out, are you like transform? Like, we'll find out some way, because we saw in the opening there was kind of like a shady group of human CEOs or CEO like figures. So there's clearly something going on. But like, I wouldn't be surprised if they were responsible. But
yeah, I kind of feel like this might be a bit like Chainsaw Man, where it's like everybody just knows these things, because there was like a siren that went off and an announcement that's like, a demon is attacking the city. Everyone take cover. As if this was like a regular occurrence type thing. You know?
At this point, which is a year in the past, like people, you know, are aware that these demons exist. It's just a matter of did these demons show up like a year prior to that? Have they been always part of human society? We'll find out at some point, I'm sure.
While this is just about to happen, we do kind of get a flashback. We're going further deeper in, now we're in the past, but the series is set in the past, but then we get like a flashback within that where Keiji is remembering back to this night where his sister Sarah was eaten by this demon, and it's like hen house or whatever is on fire and his sister is eaten and killed, and it's like a traumatic event to him. And that's when he kind of realizes he has this ability to squawk and attack demons to a certain extent.
Well, that happens later in the episode, near the end, after he's used it in the present or the 1 year ago.
Well, he does like squawk at the old, like the flashback demon. I don't think it works, but I think he like tried to or something.
Well, it does a flashback, and then it goes back to the fight in the, you know, in the 1 year ago present. And then it goes back to the flashback to show what happened then. So it kind of
like the origin of it, like we shouldn't skip ahead, but yeah, it goes back and forth between we're in a flashback, then go to another flashback, then go back to the first flashback, then go back in the second flashback again, and then pop back out to the first flashback. So
we get the commercial break, and when we come back, we just have the big fight scene with Keiji and a salesman demon trying to sell cars. And this is when Keiichi, like you said, we do the flashback, come back, and we get the realization that he had discovered this move. So he uses it. It's called finishing move. I'm going to try to say this. Koei Koko, which is spelled like K-O-E-K-O-K-O-O, which is, I guess, just the sound of a chicken or a rooster, I assume.
Yeah, it definitely felt like a chicken pun. It probably is very obvious in Japanese, but maybe a little harder to pick up on in English.
Yeah, it's almost like they didn't translate it, but if they were to like translate it, they would have said like cockadoodle-doo. But yeah, I think they just kept the Japanese version, which is what I said. And this like is like this blast that shoots out of them, and it's so powerful it just like blows a giant hole in this thing, killing the demon and just splattering its blood and guts everywhere. And the old man sees this and he sort of speculates, and again, this is all very cheesy. Let's just be clear. This is all goofy and cheesy, but he's just like very seriously saying, oh, I think that he had used the sound of resonance. The power of resonance was able to destroy the demon or something. But whatever.
I think he even says like, you sometimes see it on TV when someone can like break a glass, but to destroy a monster of this size, you know, like.
It's basically a lore reason for like why that attack worked. And I think it should be noted that the way when the monster exploded, it was extremely Fist of the North Star coded, which is not a surprise because this whole series is kind of Fist of the North Star coded. But I think they even used the Fist of the North Star, like some sound effects and visual like motifs that are just straight from the Fist of the North Star. So it was very, very clear trying to homage that.
Definitely, yeah. And then the last like double flashback we get after the demon is killed is we get one more quick flashback here. It's not the end of the episode. We've still got more, but he flashes back one more time and he to that night when his sister was killed, and he looks up and we see the demon that had killed her, and it's kind of like a very humanoid looking demon, and it's walking away and it has like a mark on the back of its neck, which I'm assuming is like
also very Joestar. Like he's going, he's trying to find, because when he was fighting a demon after he killed it, he was looking for that mark and he didn't find it on the demon. So he's very much, he's looking for that man, or we assume it's a male, but like
beast.
He's looking for the demon who killed his sister. And of course that demon had a human form, just like the demon he just fought did. Though this demon may have the ability to go back and forth between forms, like a Titan Shifter or something maybe. Yeah, that was just, again, thinking because of Patrick Seitz is like just doing the voice work, kind of already in the mindset. And it was just very much like trying to find Dio, kind of what came to my mind, and clearly what came to your guys' mind as well.
Again, a little bit more of like world building and kind of comedy, and again, establishing the fact that this is a regular occurrence. Everyone just sort of like gets together and they just start cleaning up the mess. You know, there's like putting all the like body parts of the demon into trash bags, and even Mr. Cluckers is helping do that and stuff. They clean up the street, and then Mr. Cluckers is saying, "No, I'm out of here." He decides to take off. He kind of tells he's talking to himself, but he's telling the viewers, "I'm a born wanderer. I'm on my way." He decides he's going to go back and meet that woman again, to, you know, because he walked out on her. He's like, I'm not a bad guy. I'm going to go see her again." Only to find that lady chicken has found another
rooster
in the hen house.
Found another cock.
Yep, another cock, like, and she's a cheating lover, and he decides to wander on after that.
The joke being here, of course, he got cucked, like in every literal sense of the word.
Yeah. We get the credit sequence, the ending, and then when we come back, post-credit sequence, we see a new... This is weird. It's very... I think it's supposed to be a girl.
It is. It's like very clearly... She's not a rooster. She's just a female chicken. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And she does. We see her, and she is like got this weapon that she's using to electrify another demon. She's taking down a demon, and she uses this attack called Thunderbird, and then she takes down this demon who's like a flasher demon, a demon who like is flashing people. And so that's going to be the next character I assume we're going to meet. And then at the very, very end, we saw that they include a piece of fan art from, I guess, I don't know, from a manga reader or something. I don't know if you saw that, Seda.
I didn't, but I cut the credits early, so maybe I just missed it.
It was just kind of interesting. It was the full opening and the full ending, and they also showed like a piece of fan art for Rooster Fighter. So, like, okay.
Yeah, I guess there must have been some contest announced or something.
It looked Japanese. It wasn't in like a Toonami thing. It was probably part of the original. Well, I don't know. I mean, this is original now, so I don't know where they got this from.
It may have been a contest, like they when the anime was announced. Maybe because it was based on manga, so maybe manga magazine announced, "Hey, an anime is getting made for this series. If you want to submit some fan art for it, and we should reveal it in like 6 months' time," that's probably what happened, I guess.
Well, okay, here's a question before we talk about our thoughts about this episode. Real quick, was this the premiere, like world premiere?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
It has not aired in Japan yet. Like, this is, it's airing, I don't even know when it's airing in Japan, but this was the world premiere. Even Tom and Sarah mentioned at the beginning of the block, so this is the first airing internationally.
Okay.
It's the same thing with Dandy, where Dandy premiered first in America before it was aired in Japan.
All right, well, let's go around the horn. And Crocodile, you can go first. What are your thoughts on this episode?
I will say that it, I think, does a lot of things by the book, but it executes them pretty well. Like, it's, you know, it's pretty goofy, kind of silly, but it was fun. It was just kind of, like, straightforward. He's a protagonist, very shonen coded, but he's like a grown man rather than like a teenager, and so all that entails. Just very like, I believe in doing justice and helping people and being, I'm a manly man, and you know, again, very why am I blanking his name? Protagonist of Kenshiro, there we go. Jesus Christ. Yes, he's very Kenshiro-esque, and so that I think all plays into the Fist of North Star coding of this entire series. But yeah, and of course his sad backstory of his sister, which is pretty typical, but so far I think perfectly well done. I will mention that death of his sister, like that at the second flashback, was very much a Super Saiyan coded moment, because he gained the Sonic Screech ability after he watched his sister die, so that was very Super Saiyan coded. You know, birth of Super Saiyan, you know, back in Planet Namek and whatnot, so that was very much coded. So then obviously the backstory of the old man who saved him, and he lost his wife, that was sweet and tender, like well-worn ground, we've seen that a million times, but it was pretty well executed, I felt here. Battle's fine, you know, nothing outrageous, you know, it did its purpose, he did his flashy moves. It wasn't necessarily an animation tour de force, but I don't think it was impaired or slacking in any way either. I think it was good. Yeah, I just think this was a good premiere, a good premise of a good protagonist. I think it's just a solid rating of good. I've seen this all before with like humans or humanoids as opposed to chickens, but yeah, I thought it was just normal, straight, seen before, but well executed for what it was trying to do.
Seda?
It's the type of show that you know you're not going to take like super seriously because it's a rooster fighting, right? Like, So I think that gives it some leniency in terms of, you know, is it believable? Like character development, these sorts of things. Like, no, it's a rooster who's fighting. Like, now it can't be. There has to be like some substance to it, I think, for it to be any good at all. But I do think, you know, you kind of have to take it for what it is. Animation definitely uses more of that like CG 3D animation, but I think for a show like this, I think it actually works out pretty well. For like with the big kaiju type titan monsters that we're fighting, we've only seen a few of them, but I think it's an appropriate art style and animation style for a show like this. I am curious to see, like, first episode was basically all about our main character KG, and based on the opening and based on what we've seen, we can expect, you know, like a female chicken. There's like the little tiny one also that I know plays a role. And like, how is that going to work? I don't know. I am curious to see more.
Yeah, we've got our archetypes. We got like our femme fatale. We got our little kid sidekick. And I think there might have been a rival character in there too. Yeah, with the other.
Yeah, at least. Look like. So my thoughts are much of the same. Yeah, this is very, very parody. Like, I mean, I think it's taking itself seriously in the sense of a parody would take itself seriously. I think this is supposed to be tongue-in-cheek and goofy, but also takes itself seriously in a way that's fun. I like the animation. I do think the whole thing was CG. And I thought that there were times when, like, some of the human characters, it was hard to tell. It was CG. I thought they did a pretty good job in that regard. But the monsters definitely kind of stood out as super CG. But the characters, though, were really well done CG in that they kind of didn't look that CG. They looked more 2D, which I think helped
a lot.
There
are times you could tell, but I agree with you.
My feeling was that I thought it was a mix for some, like the monsters were obviously 100% 3D. I thought for some of the characters, it seemed like it swapped back and forth between 2D and 3D depending on the scene, but it might need to be, maybe I might need to do a rewatch, but that was my take on the like human characters in KG, that sometimes was 3D but sometimes was 2D, but
I think it was pretty much 3D the whole time. They just used this technique that was really good. That was my take on it. Yeah, I mean, and like again, it's like a show that is, I don't think you're supposed to take it seriously. You're just supposed to like chuckle, and there was a couple of moments I definitely chuckled. There was the moment when they played like the sad insert song, and I actually really kind of laughed at that. I mean, I think the point was that it's supposed to be this dramatic moment, but it wasn't, because it was like goofy to see this all being done with roosters and chickens. And I mean, the only thing I didn't like about the episode, honestly, was the whole like them, like the S rating. Like, I didn't need that. Like, you didn't have to include that. I get that it's nature, they're animals, but still, we don't need to see that. But everything else was kind of fun. And I definitely like the premise of like everyone just treating him like he's a rooster and treating them like chickens. The problem is, though, there's a real like, you have to really step aside from it, though, because they see him doing these things that are obviously intelligent to a certain degree. And they just I feel like the human characters just sort of write it off as like nothing, which is weird.
No, I think the old man and the kids after the fact were pretty impressed with him. Like, they didn't necessarily think he was, some like space god chicken or whatever, but they were like, wow.
Yeah, but I don't think they think he's intelligent. Cool. I think either just like, wow, that chicken saved us. I don't think they're like they could walk up to him and talk to him or anything. I think they still treat him like he's just an animal. And I think that's the point. But like, it's weird that he can do things that clearly, I don't know, like he obviously has a level of intelligence. I mean, we're going to see, we saw at the end of this episode, we saw a chicken wielding a weapon. Now, I'm assuming we're going to see human beings reacting to this and being like, hey, look, it's a chicken, you know? It's like, wait.
Hey, look, it's a chicken and she's got a sword. Hey, what's up?
Yeah, exactly. That? Hey. Yeah, that's going to be like part where it starts to. But again, I don't think you're supposed to think too much about it at this point. I think you're just supposed to be like, it's goofy. It's like you said, it's like Fist of the North Star with chickens. I thought it was pretty good. I don't think it's like, go out and tell everybody you know to go watch it. But I think it's like, this is kind of fun. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, and so that is Rooster Fighter, episode one. I thought I learned that there are 10 episodes. I'm going to double check that. 11 episodes, at least 11, maybe 12 episodes. Oh, no, wait, no, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the manga. Sorry. 12 episodes, looks okay. Like. So it'll be 12.
I think that makes sense because I think most of the Toonami original anime are 12 to 13, whereas yeah. Most of the original Western productions are 10. I guess Rick and Morty was 10. Was that right? Rick and Morty, the anime, was 10, I think.
I think so.
It's been too long. I forget.
But stuff like Fena and Lazarus and Ninja Kamui and all those other shows tend to be 12 to 13.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense, too, because those obviously operate more on the core because they're probably airing in Japan. I'm assuming this will air in Japan. So, yeah. Especially with a Japanese dub, so. All right. Rooster Fighter. He's a rooster and he fights.
Yeah, let's get right to the point.
Basically it. And it's goofy. And I thought that the opening was all right, and I thought the ending was actually pretty good. I mean, it wasn't amazing or anything, but I thought it was, again, very parody. Very much a parody ending of a typical, like, anime, but with roosters. Okay. Well, let's get away from the weirdness and let's get back into the more traditional shows.
Oh, from weirdness to more weirdness? All right, that sounds good.
So let's go ahead with talk about Primal. Primal, Season 3, Episode 9, The Hollow Crown. So Spear is fighting this big orc guy, but he keeps, in his mind, seeing this orc being portrayed as his child. And he's just got his family on his brain, basically. He bites the scalp off this guy, kills him, and then he goes into the cave where he's staying, and he decides he's going to start painting, and he starts making cave paintings of his family, or what he wants, basically. Meanwhile, Mira and the crew are searching for him, and this includes their newborn child that she has on her back. And during this, we keep cutting back to more Spear having to do competitions, but he's just not interested in competing. He just wants to go back to his painting. He wants to go back to, he'll just quickly go out, kill somebody. He won't even pick up the crown anymore. He ignores the woman giving him the crown and just walks past her and goes back to painting.
And she's clearly not having it, as both not only here, but throughout the episode, like, not caring about the crown is a mortal insult as far as this matron is concerned.
Yeah, it's like he's dissing their society or their ritual. And the other interesting thing that we're learning, though, is that as he continues to do this and continues to drink the water of life, sure enough, his body is being restored. He's being healed. The next fight we see him, he no longer is missing half his skull. His face is restored. His skin color is returning, pretty much to the point where he's almost completely healed with the exception of his right arm.
Yeah.
I would still say he has some disfigurement and discoloration even at the end of the episode, but you can see an obvious trend getting towards the back to full health or life or whatever you want to call it throughout the episode. Like, there's definitely milestones, like you just mentioned, with his scalp and whatnot. So,
well, by the end of the episode, his head looks the same as like his old self. Like, he has the full head of hair. His face is completely, he no longer has the upturned zombie nose. He's got a regular human face.
I would still say his skin tone isn't right, and there's like still some scarring.
Maybe,
but
the skin
it's definitely
tone.
Like the best he's looked in this entire
season.
The
only part of him that to me that looks zombie anymore is just the hand by the end of the episode, and even that appears to be growing back. Like, there's muscle that's appearing now near the base of his hand. So, well, like I said, he's being restored, and like you said, the shaman is upset that he's ignoring the ritual, and that's when we get the commercial break. When we come back, we get, I just wrote down, the baby won't shut up, just crying until Mira lets it run around.
Yeah, there's a scene when Mira and Fang are like, they're on the search or whatever, and they're like on a bridge, like a tree bridge, and they're letting the baby crawl. I'm like, be careful, that baby could crawl right off, and almost does.
I remember I saw a baby crawl into some mud, and I'm thinking to myself, man, that baby's going to get a nasty infection.
Yeah. Again, every time I see that stuff, I just think, like, you know what? This is like thousands of years ago. Like, it was just different. It was a different time.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that's how things rolled back in whatever BC. But I'm just thinking to myself, like, oh yeah, the baby's gonna have a nasty ass rash.
Yeah, probably.
Tomorrow or whatever. It's the nastiest thing you've ever seen. But yeah.
Meanwhile, Spear is confronted by this giant, a literal giant guy. A giant attacks, or is facing off against him, but he's interested in the hair because he had gotten a piece of the last component. He'd gotten like this little bit of a staff that had a face on it, and now he wants to get this giant's hair. He kills the giant, cuts off his hair, and uses that to make a little doll, and his plan is to give this doll to his child. He goes back to his cave, and this is when the shaman brings this like young woman to the cave, and she undresses in order to be kind of like an offering, I guess, to Spear, but he's not interested.
Yeah, the shaman saw the paintings, and I guess my reading of it was like, hey, maybe you'll be more grateful, or like, you know, be willing to fight more, like, you know, give more effort or whatever if we give you someone to sleep with. And the prostitute basically undresses, and then Spear just kind of yells at him and runs off. Nope, yeah. That didn't work.
Meanwhile, we get a little more of the other team. The Fanglings are sort of fighting over the baby insofar that they want to be the one that plays with the baby and have the baby ride on their back. But while this is all
fighting
happening...
Fighting in the most adorable way possible.
Yeah, it's very cute. Yeah. I didn't notice until this scene that the little two little baby T-Rexes are the exact opposites of each other. If you look at the patterns on them and the colors on them, they're just like mirror. Like, one has like, don't quote me on this, but one has like red in the front and blue in the back, and then the other one has blue in the front and red in the back.
Yeah, that's been true since last season, because remember their father is like a bigger red T-Rex?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's always been this way. I'm just saying I only just noticed this. I'm noticing that they're like mirrors of each other. I think I read somewhere, you know what, there was an interview with Genndy Tartakovsky. I think it was a Reddit thing where he was answering questions about, it was like recently, like within the last couple of weeks. And one of the details that came out of that was that like one of those kids is a boy and one's a girl. He even named them, I think, but I don't remember what the names are. Because I think someone asked that. They're like, what are those things called? And he named them. And he also revealed that one's a boy and one's a girl, apparently. But while they're all having this fun, suddenly this big, dark, black beast attacks them and starts to, you know, they're in danger. And that's the last of them. That's the last of them we see this episode, because the rest of the episode is Spear. He gets on his pterodactyl and flies back to the village to give the toy to his kid. He kind of, while he's walking up to the hut, he does see his reflection in the water and kind of realizes his face is returning to normal. He's healing. But then he learns that they're gone, and he starts to track them. He kind of gets on his pterodactyl and starts tracking them, trying to find where they are, and that's where the episode ends.
Yeah, I'm just, the tail end of this episode, I'm just kind of like cringing, because, not because of anything the episode's doing poorly, but just the fight with Mira and Fang, and against the panther demon monster thing. And there's just like bloody exchanges going over place, and Mira's barely saving the baby from getting crushed. And obviously we know most, if not everyone's going to survive, but it's still like kind of heart-wrenching, like, oh my god, the baby, oh my god, the Fang's kids, oh my god, Fang, and just like this panther demon running amok. And then obviously Spear's racing towards them, doesn't know what's going on, but he knows, but like he's just tracking them, and he's always going to find what's the scene. And just like we saw in the preview, and it's just a matter of like what he's going to find and how he's going to react and what shape are Mira and Fang and the kids going to be. And so we're just going to wait till next week to find out, but obviously going to be injured to some degree, but hopefully, and we know, I guess they live, or at least most of them, but still, I'm just hoping for the best, because
for all we know, Mira dies. I mean, it could happen. Next week is the final episode, right?
I mean, it is possible, because I can't remember if we see Mira in the flash forward end of season 2, so I suppose maybe it's possible that Mira dies and Spear is like fully restored and takes care of their kid. I think that would kind of suck ass, but like, I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
I think we do see Mira in the flash forward.
Okay.
Well, I haven't seen it in a while, remember. But if we do, that at least takes that off the table.
Or it could be, this is going to be like, I mean, I'm not trying to like be doom and gloom. I'm just trying to think like what they could do here. And maybe, you know,
he
sacrifices himself to save them, you know, maybe this is his going to be his end.
Yeah, I don't know.
We just don't know. I'm curious to find out. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I thought it was a pretty good episode overall. I mean, it was kind of starts out kind of comedic and goofy, especially with like Spear kind of like, he's almost like he's lounging around drawing on the paint on the wall. And it almost reminds me of like a schoolgirl just sort of like kind of giggling to himself about thinking about the family and stuff. But
I mean, this is not the first time he's been a father, but it's still like being a father still like doesn't get old really.
And I'm really happy to see that he is at least like actually is being healed here. So that's really good.
I am curious if that elf of shaman is going to do it. Oh, I just want to make one last point.
Okay.
I'm curious if an elven shaman is going to do anything, because she's clearly reaching her limits with regards to Spear's lack of giving a shit about the Fight Club. So
I kind of hope she's just done, that she's out of the picture now, frankly.
That would be nice, but it's hard to say. So who knows? But I'm just watching her. I've got my eyes on her.
The Fanglings' names are Spike and Sonya.
Okay.
Spike's the blue one. Sonya's the red one.
Any other thoughts about this episode, Seda?
I thought it was a great episode. I mean, the beginning was a little bit goofy, but I don't know. I just thought it was a pretty good episode overall. Like, I'm one more episode left to figure out or to see how this all concludes. Is this the end of Primal altogether? I kind of assumed the last one was, but we weren't expecting season 3, and I don't know. I think kind of a lot rides in the episode in a way. I'm curious to see what they do with it.
Yeah. I'm there too. I think it was fine. And I do think like it's a Genndy show. So of course he's going to sneak some comedy in there, even when it is, you know, a serious, brutal show. So I think overall the season has been well directed, as to be expected from him. So, all right, well, let's move on to a show that is hard to take seriously sometimes, but it is trying, and that is Blue Lock. Blue Lock, Episode 6, I'm Sorry. Team W is who they're up against this time, and Team W has this crazy duo where there's one guy who's always grinning, and he's like kind of cocky, and he's always talking to his other guy who never speaks, but we always hear his inner monologue. And everybody's in the room and they're all planning, you know, they're kind of planning on what their match is going to be, Team Z. And, but one of them, Kuon, is not there. He's taking a shower, and he's usually the guy who always has the plans. And so they're kind of like, well, we're just trying to do this by ourselves. He ends up coming back. He says, okay, we're going to call this plan Operation Southern All-Stars, which is some reference to like a band or something. And
yeah, I didn't get it.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell if it was a real band or if it was made up. I don't know.
I would have assumed it was a soccer reference, even if we weren't totally familiar with it. But did they mention it was a band reference in the show?
Or? Yeah, they talked several times about the fact that like some of the things were references to songs. Yeah. But I think it could have just been made up. Like it could have been a fake band that they made up for the show. Anyway, my next note says that Chigiri gets taunted. What did I mean by that?
Yeah, so they're playing against Team W, and I think Isagi mentions Chigiri's name, and then the twins on the other team, or the brothers, I don't know if they're twins, I forget, on the other team are like, oh, Chigiri, we know you. You broke your leg, or he didn't break his leg, but you know, you injured and
ACL.
They basically knew him from the past. So they're like taunting him, like, you can't, you know, move or whatever. Like, are you just going to break yourself or you're just going to wear out or whatever?
I think they call him a glass leg or something. That's basically psyching him out until he might re injure himself, like, permanently or something of the sort. So basically, in the worst case scenario in his head, and that of course caused Chigiri to kind of freeze up.
And while this is going on, even Isagi is kind of like talking to Chigiri, and he's like, why aren't you get your head in the game? Why are you're not trying hard enough? And he kind of even talks down to Chigiri a little bit, not in like a totally mean way, but he is kind of getting a little upset. And he's like, you need to try harder. We're going to lose if you don't get your act together. I mean, you can do this. Try it. You know, he's just getting on him about it.
It's very much a bro to bro, get your shit together, bro kind of thing.
Yeah. And while this is all going on, Isagi kind of notices that like Team W's defense is not very good. They're apparently, you know, they're kind of blowing through them. And it ends up that Kuon ends up getting 3 goals right before the halftime. Like he ends up like striking all 3 times. And Isagi's kind of surprised, like, why is Team W's defense? It's like they just don't seem to have their act together. As long as we keep these two star players occupied, we're making all sorts of goals. And so right before the commercial break, they've already made 3 goals. And then when we come back, the second half of the game begins, and suddenly Kuon just starts messing up. He's missing passes. He's fumbling. He's not doing great. And Isagi's like, what's going on with this guy? He was doing so good a minute ago. Has he lost his touch or something? Or is he zoning out? What's going on? And then he notices one time that Kuon gets up and he's smiling.
Yeah, he does the creepy eye thing that they do in this anime.
Oh, yeah, he had the monster eyes too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Monster swirly eyes. And then Team W just starts scoring on him. Boom, boom, boom. And there's even a point where Kuon actually does a move that Isagi picks up on where he's like, he's helping them. He's helping Team W. He realizes this. And this is when it's revealed that, yes, Kuon is a traitor. He fesses up to it.
Yeah, I think it was Isagi who just calls him out on it, right?
Yeah, he calls him out.
Betraying us, motherfucker?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Seda.
And then he basically explains, and this is something that I'm sure you considered, when they were talking about the rules in an earlier episode, you know, even if the team falters, whoever has the most goals in like the group can go on. So he's playing for that. Like, hey, you know, our team is probably unlikely to win. So I'm going to score the most goals. Even if our team loses, then that means I'm fine.
Yeah, that's it's even more than that. He conspired. So when we thought that he was taking a shower earlier and was late for their meeting, it was because he was secretly meeting with Team W with this plan. And he says, let me score 3 goals and then I'll help you win.
Yep.
And that's what he's doing here. And he's basically saying, this is my weapon. My weapon is strategy, and I'm going to beat the system by helping my team fail, but I'm going to get a lot of scoring in, so I get to
continue. My weapon is being a traitorous douchebag.
Basically.
And he even says at one point here, like, now from now on, it's 12 on 10. You know,
yes.
Like, I'm playing against you now. He goes on the other side. Like, he walks over to the other team and starts playing on their side. Like, I think that should be, like, offsides call or something, but, like,
well, obviously... it gets called out by the woman, and she's talking to Ego, and she's like, are you going to allow this, Ego? And Ego's just kind of like, hush up, let's watch.
He's like, yes, I
will. This is actually kind of amusing. I think in a previous episode, I said that Henri and Ego are very, very similar to each other. Or they're similar, even though they have, like, different dispositions. And, like, oh, I guess they are roommates.
Yeah, it kind of seems that way. He wants to have... I think Ego in this moment is kind of saying that he wants to see what Team Z does in this situation.
Right, if they can't handle this, they're not fit for Blue Lock, is pretty much what he's thinking.
Right. So Kuan reveals his plan to leave the team during this moment. He's explaining what everything I just said about the fact that he conspired with Team W. And now, because of the comeback, the score is now 4-3 with Team W in the lead. And that's where the episode pretty much ends. The match is not over. And the little extra time, goofy omake bit at the end of the episode is basically everybody talking about whether they eat rice or bread for breakfast.
And of course, Kuon is a motherfucking cornflaker. Should have known us up with him.
I thought it was interesting. This is not important, or maybe it's not even interesting. I just thought I just kind of like went, during the omake, nobody's treating Kuan like a traitor in the omake. He's still just a teammate in the.
Well, I assume this will be taking place before. If there's any chronological order to these omakes or like sense of time.
They almost feel like they're just like, they could technically be canon, but I also treat them like they're not canon. They're just sort of like the characters hanging out. But yeah. That's it. That's this episode. I will say overall, I kind of liked this episode mostly because I didn't see the Kuan betrayal coming. And I think it's an interesting idea. Like, this would never happen in a real soccer match, but in this Blue Lock scenario, it's plausible that this could happen. So I like this.
Similar to the tuning exams, we all remember the first exam where when the going over the rules, Sasuke very much notices that these rules are about cheating and not getting caught rather than doing well at the exam. And obviously this happens in a lot of narratives where they have like some construct of rules and you eventually figure out the point of the rules isn't necessarily like to do the task justly, but see how well you can do it unjustly and get away with it because the rules incentivize it. Like this whole score, if you score most goals, you can pass no matter what, incentivizes bullshit, which is why, of course, Ego's partly okay with it, because, like, he made the rules so that this would encourage bullshit.
Right.
My only thinking to myself is, how does Kuan think he's going to get out of this okay? Like, is there, like, security at Blue Lock that, like, maybe kicks you out as soon as you fail the program or something? Because if I was Team Z and we lose, we're snatching Kuan and we're taking hammer to his kneecaps. If we win, we're snatching Kuan and taking hammer to his kneecaps. Like, the dude's not leaving here with intact knees, no matter what happens. So I don't know what his plan is.
I'm going to assume that there must be some kind of protection.
Yeah, there must be. Otherwise, because, yeah.
Or the show is filled with a little bit two-dimensional characters that won't go that far to that degree. You know what I mean?
You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously,
I get it. Kneecaps
is a thing to do, but, like, this dude did a thing... deserves the loss of kneecaps. That's all I'm saying. Like,
yeah, I agree with you. In the real world, that's probably more plausible. I think in the fantasy world of Blue Lock, less likely that they would actually attack him. They don't want to break the rules either, technically. So I guess there's also that. There probably is a rule. I mean, they had fouls in this episode. So there's probably rules that you can't attack other players, I assume.
I mean, you can just wait till they get into the locker room. They already kicked out Blue Lock already, right? If they lose,
lose.
Knees, right? So,
well, maybe it's like those game shows where like they escort the losers out before the end of the show or something. I don't know.
Maybe that has to be it because I don't know. Like, otherwise, that man, he's giving up his kneecaps I don't know. That's, he did not think that went through unless there's something that blocks that a scenario from happening. That's all I'm saying. Man should lose his kneecaps.
We still didn't learn what Chigiri's deal is. We still don't know what his deal is yet. I mean, we know what
I only noticed that in the opening, Chigiri like looks like when he like does a kick. It almost looks like a ballet kick.
Oh,
So I'm like, maybe he's like got some like technique that he's kind of I don't know, shy about. I don't know. It looks like a pirouette or whatever that's called. But yeah.
So the preview looked like it was all for next episode. Looked like it was all about Isagi. But given that we never saw Chisagi's weapon, and I assume Kuon never saw it either, I wouldn't be surprised if like Shigeru's weapon, whatever it is the key to like turning this game around. That's one plausible thing that could definitely happen, I feel.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been leaked to the other team, so they wouldn't be able to counter it because they wouldn't know.
Also, I don't have the details. I don't want to go into the details. We'd all be speculating. But it was made clearer in this episode for people who really care, like what the scoring was with all the other teams. And it was like some teams were doing amazing. Like one team, I think, had beat another team like 8-0. And so like, we've been watching a lot of matches in the show with Team Z, and it's always been real close, like 1-2 or 2-1 scores or something, 3-1. But like, there's other teams out there winning like 8-0 and stuff like that. So, okay. Well, that's it for Blue Lock. Like I said, I think it was a better episode than most because I like this idea of the Kuon trading, being a betrayer in the team. I mean, there's no way they're going to keep this guy, right? On the team?
No. What?
I can't imagine. Like, there's not going to be a redemption.
He'll be too tortured. Like, again, a man should not be walking out of this room or this facility with intact kneecaps. So, like,
It does beg the question then, where are they going to get an 11th player? So, we'll see, I guess. All right. Let's move on to Tokyo Revengers. Tokyo Revengers, Episode 6, Regret. I want to thank Crocodile for being here. He just wants to mention, by the way, real quick before he leaves, that Raizo was a weenie, which, he didn't. we'll get into that later. Raizo is weird. Anyway, one thing I have noticed about Tokyo Revengers, though, every episode has been a word that begins with R. You notice that?
No, I actually did not. But when you had to write them down, I bet you, but that pattern comes out.
Yeah. This is the 6th episode in a row where it's a R word. So, yeah. Okay. So the episode begins. We get a flashback. Well, technically it begins with Draken and Mikey leaving the hospital, but, after an unnecessary flashback to what happened in the previous episode, but as Takemichi is following Draken, we get to see Draken's flashback where we learn that he grew up in a brothel, and that when he was younger, he got his tattoo on his head with the dragon. He wanted to be tough, and he was wanting to get in with this group called the Samayama crew, which is led by this guy named Samayama. And they tell him that they've been hearing about this grade schooler. It's so funny to me that
these are like fifth graders. And they kind of mention that he's like tall for a fifth grader, but they're like, what? These are like 10-year-olds?
I know.
I don't know. Okay.
It's hard to take seriously. But anyway, they hear about this one real rough and tumble grade schooler named Mikey Sano, and it's like, oh, Draken, we want you to bring him to us so that we can, you know, beat him up or whatever. And Draken runs into Mikey for the first time. They meet for the first time. And, you know, of course, Mikey's very aloof and, you know, sucking on
like a pop. Or it's like a pop. It's like a Tootsie Pop.
Like a lollipop. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And he's basically like, do you want to come with me? And he's like, yeah, sure, why not?
He says, I'll go with you because I like you or something like that.
Yeah, let's be friends. I don't know if he says that, but he's very, you know, very aloof, very just.
So, you know, and at this point, Draken's feeling a little bad about this. He's like, guy seems kind of nice. I guess I'll do this, but I'm not sure. Anyway, he brings him back to Samayama. And before Samayama even gets to interrogate Mikey, he just starts running up on the guy, jumps, and just drop kicks him in the face. Yep. Knocks him out. So this is when we learn that Mikey's a big deal. We come back to the present, and Takamichi and Naoto are looking for the guy named Onisai, who was the former Mobius boss. And they actually just kind of accidentally run into him. He's like a construction worker.
Yeah, I guess they somehow knew he was a construction worker at this site, which is why they're there to begin with, I guess.
Oh, yeah, but he just, yeah,
because he's a police officer, so he would know these things or have access to these things. And then, yeah, they just kind of sort of bump into him. And then he's being chewed out by his boss, but then they kind of just like, you know, they have Naoto is a policeman, so they don't really show this, but they're probably like, hey, we want to take you in for some questions. So they take him to like a diner nearby.
Right. So. Yeah. And that's when he basically is like, well, you know, what's this about, officer? And they're like, well, I want to question you about the recent murder that took place with, Hinata or whatever. And so you were a member of Mobius, and I heard that you were involved during a thing that happened 12 years ago. And he says, Onisai starts breaking down. He starts crying, and he's like, he feels really guilty or something. I don't know, really quite couldn't get a read on him here. But he says,
if I remember correctly, it basically he says like the catalyst was when Mobius attacked the Tomon gang, the Tokyo Manji gang. Whenever this is one of those things I had to remind myself, when they say Tomon, that's the same as Tokyo Manji. That's a short form of it. But they're like, he's like, that's not when Draken died. That's like the catalyst. And they basically kind of emphasizes that we need to prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
He of course doesn't know the context of why he's being asked this, but he basically said that was, I forget the details exactly, but it's like, that's not exactly when Draken died, but it was the catalyst that led to it.
Yeah. He Something also like says that. Too, that like, and he makes it clear this was new information to them. He says this was also triggered by infighting among Tomon. He says It wasn't just Mobius that killed him. It was just this infighting that was happening. And he said that someone in Tomon is trying to pit them against each other.
Oh, right. Yep.
So we come back from the commercial break. And Takamichi is going to go back in time. So he goes back in time. He wakes up and he's on the back of a bicycle. And Akun is there. Giving him a ride,
which is when Takamichi kind of realizes, like, oh yeah, Akun's alive in this timeline. And he kind of, you know, gets a little bit sappy, admittedly, understandably so.
And he kind of tries to set him on the right path a little.
Right.
He asks him, like, what do you want to be? Like, what would you want to be? What's your dream? And you know, he's like, oh, I think I don't know, like, be like a hairstylist, maybe. He's like, yeah, you should do that. Do that. Become a hairstylist. You know, Akun's just sort of like, what's wrong with you? You know. Mm-hmm. But maybe this will have an effect. Maybe we'll come back to the future and we'll see Akun is alive and he's a hairstylist. We'll see. I don't know. My next note is broken. I wrote it down. It says, Tai tries to stop the battle.
Yeah, so basically, the two other Tokyo Manji characters, who I guess you had written down as Tai and Pa... They're trying to like instigate this battle with Mobius, because in the previous episode I missed the podcast, like Pa's girlfriend I guess was attacked, so he's all like, we have to fight these guys, you know, we can't let them get away with it. And she was the character in the hospital, Takamichi shows up, and you know, he's just kind of an underling, you know, character, and even Mikey's like, you shouldn't be here. And he's Takamichi's like, no, we got to stop this fight. We can't let this happen. And of course, Pa is like, did you see what they did to my girlfriend? And so that's basically the whole conflict of this episode, is the infighting that Otis and I talked about was, some of the people are trying to stop the fight. Some of them are trying to instigate the fight. And even I think the key thing here, the key point of this whole sequence is Draken's like, wait, maybe we should take a minute to think about this. And Mikey's like, are you doubting me? And he's like, no, I'm just saying we should think. And like, that's like kind of the first, maybe, because throughout, I think the previous episode, I watched these episodes back to back because I missed a week. Takamichi's trying to look for like conflict between Mikey and Draken and can't find it. He's like, they're basically on the same level. They're in sync. But this is kind of the first time we see them kind of like at odds in any sort of way. And again, it's when Draken basically says, maybe we should think about this or something like that. And Mikey's like, you know, are you doubting me about this fight? And we really don't get a we really don't get a chance to digest this, because as soon as this happens, guess who shows up?
Yeah. So Onasai and Mobius shows up and they're like, we're here to fight you now. And that's kind of where the episode ends, right before the fight happens. But I do want to like talk about a little bit what you said too. Like, I think what Mikey said was, it wasn't so much like, do you doubt me? It was more like, are you questioning me? Like, are you questioning my decision? Kind of like questioning his authority, kind of was
that's what that's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Okay.
I just don't remember the exact wording, but basically, yeah, as soon as Draken kind of pushed back even a little, Mikey didn't really like it.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because like in the previous episode, he did kind of set Mikey straight and went against what he wanted. Like Mikey wanted to stand up to those parents Draken was like, no, this is the right thing to do. You need to bow. And then Mikey was cool with it after the fact. He's like, oh, okay. Yeah. You're my conscience, Draken. I trust you. Here it's different. It's like,
suddenly
Mikey's like, no, you don't get to talk to me like that. And it's like, oh, that's weird. Why is he mad now? I guess maybe because he's trying to protect that paw guy. Maybe, I don't know, but yeah. Yeah. And I want to say too, that like, I think somebody might look at this and go, oh, look, Takemichi accidentally caused them to fight. I don't think that's the case. I think it would have fought either way.
Yeah. I wonder if there's going to be like sort of an Oedipus sort of thing going on here. Not the mother thing, but you know, just like,
right.
Because you're trying to prevent something from happening is the cause of it happening. Type of thing.
That might happen regardless, but I don't subscribe yet to this notion that like, oh, this is a self-fulfilling time loop where Takemichi's trying to prevent the thing that he's, you know, he creates the thing he's trying to prevent. I don't think that's the case, because if that is, that's dumb, because technically the thing happened without him trying. So so I don't think that's it.
Yeah.
I hope not, I guess. And yeah, Onasai and Mobius showing up now is interesting, because I remember them talking about like when
August 3rd, Draken, I think.
Oh, like,
I think they said August 3rd is when he died, but I don't think it's August 3rd yet in the past.
Okay. Then that's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Right. I hope you're right. Cause that was confusing to me. Cause I thought like, wait, is this the warehouse where he died?
I don't think so, but sometimes the passage of time is a little bit hard to grasp.
Next episode, I need to pay closer attention to dates, because the show is giving us dates. It's like, here's the date for this, here's the date for that. I need to keep track.
Because I remember basically when he went back in time at first, it was like, it's July 19th. He dies on August 3rd. So you have 2 weeks to figure this out. And, you know, we see certain days happening, but in terms of like, wait, is it August 3rd now? Like, we kind of keep track of how much time passes in between scenes.
So that's this episode. I think this was a pretty average episode. I mean, not in a bad way. It was just like, this felt pretty typical of this show. Just more of a like information dump episode. We're learning about Mobius. We're learning about what's leading up to the battle, basically.
Yep.
All right. That's Tokyo Revengers. The regret. Yeah, I don't know what the regret is. Maybe the regret is Onasai. He's regretting having caused someone to die. I don't know. Or been involved. I don't know.
Possibly.
Yeah.
That seems plausible.
Okay. Well, we got one more show. Let's talk about One Piece. One Piece, episode 768. The third one, Raizo of the Mist, the ninja, appears. So before we talk about this real quick, I am curious, what were your thoughts about the big reveal last episode?
It's one of those things that, like, I didn't think they were going to do that. It was always on, like, the back of my mind, like, what if? Like, way back in my mind, like, what if they actually were hiding the samurai and they were just putting up a face? I'm like, nah, that's too bold. They wouldn't do that. And I didn't really even like, I never considered it impossible, but it seemed unlikely like that. That's what they're going to do. So it did catch me off guard that like, oh, as soon as he revealed himself and they they, you know, start, you know, basically crying. That was the reveal. Like, they were, when they were getting interrogated and killed and crucified, literally, about, like, we don't know who Rizo is. We've never been here. Like, they were hiding it.
Yep.
Like, the Whitebeard pirates, or not Whitebeard, the Pig Mom, or the, what is?
The Beast Pirates.
What's the?
Kaido.
What's the? Kaido, yeah. Kaido's pirates were right. That Rizo was there.
Yes.
That they were right. And the viewers were not aware of this, and we were tricked. I mean, more or less. So.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good moment in One Piece as far as, like, you know, really showing what the kind of people the Minks are. No pun intended.
I actually was feeling, right when Kinemon was about to reveal himself, I was kind of feeling like this is a little bit contrived. Like, he's so stubborn that he won't they can't stop him from appearing, and he's like, stop fighting. Like, is that something Kinemon would do even? But like, I thought that, I was thinking for a minute, and that second, this is contrived. But then basically the twist happened, like, no, okay, that works. That's fine.
So anyway, in this episode, before we cut back to the end of that, or more of that, we actually do see Jack, and he is alive, and he is on his ship, and he is on his way somewhere. He's got his, like, little fleet with him, and he's reading the paper, and it's like, it says he's dead, and he's like, I'm not dead.
Yeah.
And then, then we're back at the Minks, and we're back at the, like, we're continuing where we left off. Kinemon. He takes off his, like, robe thing or his yukata thing, and he's like, shows his back, and he's like, this is why we're here. This is the symbol of the Kozuki clan. He's got a tattoo on his back.
And then the big reveal here, I think this is after the commercial break.
That's fine.
Is that Momo is not his son.
Correct. Yeah. That's the other big twist. Kinemon was just pretending to be his father.
But they're really what I gathered from this episode was Momo Kozuki is basically the son of a certain, like, lord in Wano. Like, I'm assuming one of the royal houses. I'm assuming there's more than one. And basically Kinemon, the other guy, and even Dogstorm and Cat Viper are all, like, retainers in some way to that family.
Exactly. So
they're basically all subservient to Momo and Momo's father.
Correct. Yeah, Momo's father was Lord Odin, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, Momonosuke's his son.
And basically, the other Straw Hats spell this out explicitly. Like, what? We thought Kinemon was your father. Like, nope. I just was basically, we just put on an act to protect him, kind of thing. So yep. They say it pretty explicitly.
And this is all kind of preceded by Momonosuke yelling at Cat Viper and Dogstorm fighting, and he's like, I demand that you stop fighting. And then that's when they all kind of, like, bow to him and reveal that he's Lord Kinemon or Lord Momonosuke. And so it's like, oh, okay. And that's when they kind of agree that they're like, okay, we're going to make a truce. Lord Momo is here. So we're no longer going to fight. We're going to have a truce. They begrudgingly.
This seems like a pretty big deal to the Mings, like the King of the Day and the King of the Night, like, couldn't even look at each other, and at least now, even just for a moment, they're, you know, working at least in truce with each other. Like, I think it even shows Wanda, like, crying a bit because that big of a deal. So
it is a big deal to them, and everyone's bowing to Momonosuke except for Luffy, who refuses. I'm not gonna bow to you, you're just a little punk kid.
And then he is a little bit of a punk kid. So.
He is, and he does some, like, I'm gonna perv on Nami. And Nami lets him because she's like, oh, do you have a lot of riches in your, do you have, like, a castle or, you know,
that's a fair question.
Yeah. Everybody gets mad at him, but then they're kind of, like, fighting, but they're also, like, laughing and stuff. And that's good.
Yeah.
And to the point where even Zunisha, like, pours, like, seawater into the air and creates a rainbow.
Yeah.
So it's a little hammy and kind of goofy, but that happens. And they're like, okay, well, everybody, let's go. We're going to go meet up with Rizo. And he's in the whale tree. So they all head towards the whale tree. They have to go this long way up. And there's a secret entrance in the tail of the tree that you can get into. And on their way up there, though, Momos mentions that he's kind of wincing, and he's like, what is that voice? I keep hearing a voice.
Oh, yeah, I noticed this.
And everybody's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what did I write down here? I wrote, Momo hears a voice going up, ? Because he's the only one.
Yes. Well, we're kind of left hanging there. We're left hanging on that. But nonetheless, they go through the secret passage and they head down. And they finally, and everybody's like nin-ninning and like doing.
They kind of set it up here that you know he's not going to be what as expected. Like they set it up too hard where it's like everyone's like looking like everyone's imagining at least the boys like Luffy, Chopper, Frankie, and Usopp are all like imagining, you know, like a Ninja Gaiden ninja, you know, like cool with, you know, flashy and shadowy and sneaky and swords. And the way they set it up made it obvious that they were going to be like, they were going to be hit with something that was unexpected. And we were.
Yeah. Yeah. They
some tied up guy. I like your notes. He looks stupid.
He's got like a giant face. He has a giant head, giant face. And he's all like done up with weird makeup and weird hair.
And an annoying voice.
Yeah, annoying voice, and he's yelling at them, "Let me go! If the kingdom of Wano's been destroyed, I'm going to kill you!" And all this stuff. And he's just been tied up in there this whole time. Yeah, that's Raizo. We'll learn more about Raizo next episode, I'm sure. So yeah, there he is. He's a ninja. Yeah, I think I've kind of read all the big things in this episode. The big takeaways, like you said, are learning, you know, Momonosuke is the secret lord of Wano, who's on, you know, he's away. He's away from the kingdom. He's got his retainers trying to help him. Kinemon's not really his father. He's just someone who's sworn to protect him. And like you said, Momo hears something on the way up to the whales, and and then we see this goofy ninja. That's the episode. Any other thoughts on this?
I guess, I mean, like, the goal was, at one point, I broadly know through osmosis, like, the names of the arcs that are upcoming, and the goal was to basically reunite at Zoe and then go off and get Kaido, but there's now a twist in that Sanji was taken by Big Mom. So like, okay, that leads to the Whole Cake Island like diversion, I guess. So, you know, I guess, you know, we're going to have some sort of plot movement here about where they decide to go after this. And I don't know if that Jack guy comes back or what he's doing. So I'm curious to see, I guess, you know, who moves where now.
Yeah. We have a little bit more to learn in Zoe, just a little bit more. Some big things actually still yet to come. You're kind of on the right track, especially, you know, considering the next big thing is, like Luffy has stated already, that their next goal is to try to get Sanji back. Sanji has decided that he's not going to risk the crew's safety of Big Mom, so he goes with those guys, and now they're gonna try to get him back. So. And I did notice, too, I didn't even think about this, but, like, when they all went in the whale tree secret room and they're heading down, you know, everybody's there, including Law. Like, I kind of forgot, like, yeah, Law's still around.
Yeah, I mean, what does Law think about this? Because, you know, he wasn't really planning on surviving, necessarily. But, you know, his main goal is to take down Kaido. And, you know, he kind of just stumbled upon, I guess, Kinemon, and like he teamed up with the Straw Hats, but like his whole encounter with Kinemon and these ninjas and samurais was a little bit, you know, probably unplanned. So like, what does he think about all this?
Yeah. He never expected to survive the Doflamingo fight, but once he did, he was like, okay, well, I'm going to have to go to Zoe because that's where my crew is. And then he got caught up in everything like everybody else did. So,
yeah. So he's got a decision to make. You know, like Luffy's basically like, I know Luffy's like, I want to go get Sanji. Like, obviously, that's what Luffy's going to do. But what Law's not going to, like, I'm going to tag along? Maybe. I doubt it. But I don't know. What is Law going to do? So,
All right, and that is One Piece for this week. Again, I think this is the stuff I like in Zo, where it's like it feels like, even though it's not huge, we are definitely moving major plot things forward here. Things are happening. It's not endless fights with people we know will lose, you know, or Dressrosa.
Horty Jones.
Yeah, Horty Jones, who cares, right? Now we're like into like, oh, secrets and things are being revealed about the bigger world. I like that. All right. Anything jump out this week as far as flavor alerts?
Flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
Did you add any last week?
We added one last week. It was...
Did you re-rank Bleach last week or no?
No, we talked about it. I honestly didn't feel that strongly about it. But Crocodile was like, well, we can't do it anyway unless you were here. And so we were just like, we'll just see what you think about it. But I was like, I could take it or leave it. We could just maybe wait until Bleach finishes before we re-rank it. It's kind of how I felt.
Sure, that's fair. I agree.
But if you felt strongly that we ought to re-rank it the season or whatever, the core, we could do it. I just like, whatever.
Yeah, we could. Okay.
The one we added, I think, was the Minks were protecting Raizo reveal.
That's the best moment. I was actually thinking that, too. So, well, I'm on the same page.
I also said last week, too, I'm not ready to do it yet, but I like Draken.
Yeah, for best character.
I'm kind of leaning that way.
I was literally thinking the same thing, like, as you said that. I'm not joking. Like, Draken... Yeah. Is like out of all the Tokyo Revengers characters, like he's actually more interesting than I expected him to be. When he's first revealed, you kind of think of him as just sort of like the brute sidekick, and he's actually kind of become like and he's like now he's become like almost like the kind of like he's like the heart. I think he even calls him Takemichi calls him like Mikey's heart. He's actually kind of like the conscience and almost like the core of the plot.
Well, the thing that's nice about him, I kind of liked Mikey, too, until the last couple episodes where I felt like, you know what? I liked Mikey. He's all right. But he's clearly, like, he's not as mature as Draken. Yeah. Like, Draken is way more mature, and I like that more.
Yeah. So we're, what, 6 episodes into Blue Lock and Tokyo Revengers? So roughly halfway through the first seasons of each of those, I think.
Yeah.
Is Blue Lock... Let me do list of Blue Lock episodes. Like, is that 2 12 episode seasons or is it 2 24 episode season?
24.
Oh, so we're not even.
Oh, wow.
Those are long seasons. Or no, I guess season 1 is 24 and season 2 is 14.
Oh, interesting. Okay. We did joke last week though. We were like, I said that like we're slowly working our way up the alphabet. And I'm like,
oh yeah.
Are we gonna make it to B before the end of the season? I was like, I was like thinking like probably that's not.
Like, that's like one team an episode, which doesn't seem like we're going that fast.
Right.
But yeah, I think we already nominated voice actor Isaki. That was kind of, you know, he's got the hard job of narrating kind of everything, even if it's a little bit goofy and silly. And you know, I think he does a pretty good job of that. So we already nominated him. I kind of like, I think if I were to pick another voice, I'd pick Ego's. He's kind of like, kind of unsettling, but still imposing, kind of crazy, but not like annoying, a little bit annoying. I think it's a kind of a balance of these sorts of, you know, manic type of voice, you know, that he does and with the kind of blends well with his sort of animation and art that kind of goes with that character. So that's probably who I would nominate next out of anyone in Blue Lock or Tokyo Revengers is Jinpachi Ego. I don't know who voices him. Let me check, actually.
Yeah, take a look.
Like, do I recognize him? It's probably one of the Funimation people. You know, I know they're no longer Funimation.
I'll tell you one that...
No, I don't recognize the name. Let me see what else he's done. I'm seeing if anything pops out.
I swear, every time I see this guy, though, if you showed me a scene with only Ego, I would be like, I don't remember this episode of Soul Eater.
Oh, yeah. He's got that sort of, like, angular
art.
Yeah, it's I don't recognize any other character this guy has voiced.
Okay. Well, do you want me to add him?
Sure. Why not? We need more nominations.
Okay.
Oh, he was a character in Black Clover. Rill. Really annoying. like Lightning Kid. I don't know if you remember this guy.
Oh, yeah. The one with the fuzzy hair. Okay. Yeah. Jinpachi Ego. Okay. And what's his guy's, what's the voice actor's name?
Derek. No, Derek with one R. D-E-R-I-C-K.
All right. Derek Snow as Jinpachi Ego in Blue Lock. I'll tell you another one we're going to have to wait on, but I think is one we've already talked about, which is going to be Patrick Seitz.
For the Rooster or for KG. Yeah.
I think that might end up being really great as we go on. I mean, I thought already he's doing a pretty good job of just playing like super serious in a show that's silly and about a rooster. So,
yeah. Feels like a role Thorn for him.
Exactly.
I think that's good for now.
Yep, I'm cool with that. All right. Well, that'll do it for episode 466. Thanks for being here, Seda.
Yep, no problem.
And thanks again, Crocodile, for being here earlier. We'll be back next week for the same lineup, with the exception of, well, that's not until another week when some of the stuff in the rerun slots change, but we're locked in here for a bit on this lineup for a while now.
Well, actually, next week is the finale of Primal.
Oh, you're right. I've already forgotten. It's 10. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Next week will be the season finale of Primal. So, if we want, we can rank it then as well. Yeah. So.
It's already pretty high. So,
yeah.
Where is it in our ranking?
Let's take a look.
I think it's top 10, or is it like right around the 10 spot, I think? Let me check.
So, Primal is 14.
Okay, it got pumped down a bit. But we'll see, if we feel like we want to move it.
Right, exactly. Okay, I'm going to pin that. And then, that'll do it for this episode. And we will see you next week. And until then, later.